This is Stateside. I'm April Baer.
The Biden administration's COVID relief package passed through Congress yesterday, and it had a little reported provision that would be of specific benefit to Black farmers. It provides about $5 billion in aid to disadvantaged farmers. About a quarter of those who qualify are Black.
Black farmers have been a very important fabric of this United States.
Over the past century, Black farmers have lost millions of acres in farmland. In 1920, they numbered nearly a million. Today, there are fewer than 50,000. Bruce Michael Wilson, who owns Groundswell Farms in Zeeland, wants to help change that. He took over the farm in 2019 and hopes to use it as both a business and as an opportunity to teach the next generation about farming and land stewardship. He joins us now. Bruce Michael Wilson, welcome to Stateside.
Hello, April.
You grew up in Allegan, a little ways outside of Grand Rapids, right?
Well, not exactly Allegan. It's Allegan County, but the town I grew up in is called Hopkins.
What made your family want to move out?
Move out to Hopkins?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know every detail as to why my family wanted to move out, but I think the basis was, you know, to move away from the city. You know, my dad came from a rural country environment in the state of Mississippi. And so when he moved to Michigan, he settled in Grand Rapids. And then he thought that it would be best for his family to be raised in a rural community, a farming community in the countryside like he was.
What was your favorite part about living there?
You know, I wrote a book, or I should say I wrote and illustrated a book when I was, I think, 7 years old. And I talked about growing up on the farm, and it was near and dear to my heart, still is today. And I talked about the animals that I had to take care of on a daily basis. And I spoke about nature and just the everyday life of growing up outdoors and being in touch with, you know, the river that ran through the property as well. And, you know, all the land that I could traverse and go out hunting and fishing and do all the things that an inner city kid wouldn't have the privilege of doing.
You did not go into farming right after college. You now have a career in investing in real estate. What was it that made you want to return to farming?
You know, the farming never left my soul. I didn't go into farming, but I never left farming either, if that makes any sense. I would always come back to the farm, and I would put my time in. Even when I moved away out of state, you know, to Colorado, I would still come back every season and help my parents, you know, put in crops. We always had a large garden, you know, a large, maybe a 1 acre garden. And so, I mean, for those who don't know what an acre is, that's a sizable garden. You know, and I'd come back and help bale hay and help take care of the, you know, the cattle and the horses. And so, you know, it's never left my soul. It's never left my blood, and it's never left my DNA. So, you know, I guess it can't be really said that I left farming.
Mm-hmm. Like you say, I mean, this was a part of your life all those years in between, but there was this moment when you realized you were thinking about coming back in person to it. What was your folks' reaction when they realized that you were thinking about this seriously?
No, truthfully, they haven't really said. I mean, I think they kind of know where my heart is, you know, and my heart was always in the land and being connected to the land and being connected to nature. And that's always been a part of me. I spent a lot of time when I lived at home outdoors. And so I don't think it shocked them to know that, or to see me kind of take on this endeavor. I was really wanting to do it, you know, to kind of shine light on something where the light has just been dimmed, you know, dimmed down to a very, almost to nothing, if you know what I mean, as far as people that look like me that are out there farming, especially in Western Michigan. And it's just something that you just don't see. And so I wanted to bring that back into the forefront. and just remind people that, hey, there are farmers that look like me that can do the same work and that can produce and grow and care for the land and raise vegetables and turn it into an operation, you know, and make it a worthy operation. And also it was something that I wanted to pay homage to my ancestors about as well. People don't realize that, you know, some of the first Africans that came over to the United States, you know, they were farmers to begin with. That was part and parcel the reason why they were sought after on the West Coast of Africa anyway, because they were already natural farmers in cotton and tobacco and sugar cane and different things like that. So they Black farmers have been a very important fabric of this United States, and they've actually promoted a lot of the wealth. Black farmers, along with the institution of slavery, you know, made this country the greatest wealth creation that ever existed at that time. And so I wanted to pay homage to that.
Is there anything that's a particular favorite of yours to grow?
You know, I like sweet potatoes. I won't say that it's my favorite thing to necessarily grow, but it's probably my favorite vegetable, you know, for a number of reasons. My grandma, her name was, they called her Sweetie. And so that kind of reminds me of her, you know, growing sweet potatoes. And I love sweet potato pie. And so my mom makes the best sweet potato pie. And so if I can grow some sweet potatoes and have her make me a pie, I mean, it's the best thing ever. I love sweet corn as well, but I don't have the room to grow sweet corn. You know, the bicolor sweet corn is terrific. I would like to one day be able to acquire more land or property and grow more sweet corn so that I can service the public and put away for myself.
Right. I don't know if there's anything much better in July than the sweet corn that you get right out of the field.
Oh, man, you can't beat it. You cannot beat it.
More with Bruce Michael Wilson, the owner of Groundswell Farms in Zealand, in just a minute. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
You took over Groundswell Farm in 2019. Can we talk a little bit about what that felt like, what it was like to first step foot on the farm and begin preparing and planting?
You know, farming is something that I knew I could do. However, I had never tackled something of that magnitude before. You know, I had never tackled a commercial operation where you had to tend to so many different tentacles of that operation, you know. And when I first endeavored into it, you know, it was just me and an assistant that I had. And then I slowly added on some part-time help. But that first season was really all about what I could do. And ironically, and I know some people have even told me, they've shared with me that they didn't think I was going to make it because I purchased the farm in the middle of the season. Beginning the farm season really starts now. It doesn't start in June. And I made the transaction in July, in the middle of July.
Oh, wow. What were your work days like then?
Oh, I mean, work weeks. You know, I'm talking 80-hour work weeks, work days, 16-hour work days or more. You know, it's just around the clock. And it's 7 days a week. And, you know, it's just zero time off. And, you know, I kind of knew what I was getting myself into, I knew it was going to take away from what I was doing, and I was going to lose, you know, some income from taking on this initiative. But it was important enough for me to, you know, to seek out. And so I stuck with it.
Mm-hmm. You only had really 1 year with this before the pandemic turned everything upside down. Could you tell us a little bit about what's been going on at the farm since the coronavirus hit, and whether it's, what kind of changes it's meant to how you handle the business?
Yeah, 2 years of presumed catastrophe, you know, it was kind of a challenging process to think about what I needed to do. And that's when I started setting up e-commerce and thinking that I was going to have to go online for the most part and be able to, you know, service my customers that way. You know, people were coming to me and asking for my business, you know, and I was still able to service, you know, the markets too when I wanted to. And I didn't do it to the level of that we had in the previous years, but I did service the Holland market and the Southeast market and the Saugatuck market. So this year, you know, we're gonna be doing the same thing. You know, we're gonna be dealing with the virus again, and we're gonna be better at it this year.
Can you tell us a little bit about how much you had to deal with, or maybe how much your family had to deal with too, in terms of institutional barriers to farming? You know, for a lot of people, getting together the capital to get started on the land is just a huge, and in many cases, insurmountable problem.
You know, well, first of all, you have to be able to acquire the property to begin with. That's the largest hurdle and the biggest first step. And as you said in the beginning of the program, how many Black farmers have lost land and lost property at, you know, at one point, like in the 1920s, there were 16 million acres of land being farmed by Black farmers, and now it's less than 3 million acres that they're farming. I'm just inspired by the fact that I was able to purchase this property, and I'm very much inspired by the fact that my parents still own the property that I grew up on, 160 acres, and, you know, in Hopkins. And so I have heard of some barriers that my dad went through of, you know, with trying to get financing and loans to raise his crops. And, you know, there are those barriers that you have. And then you have to deal with the whole sense that of people just qualifying you. You know, you just, they haven't seen you, seen it before. They haven't seen Black farmers before. They don't know any Black farmers, or they don't know the history of Black farmers. So they don't know that you're qualified to do it. And so you have to prove that you can do the work and produce as well as anyone else before somebody will give you a handshake. And so, you know, that's discouraging as well, as that you over and over and over again, you have to kind of prove yourself.
You know, there are some things going on at the national level that I wanted to ask you about. The chair of the U.S. House Agriculture Committee is now a Black man, Representative David Scott from Georgia. And Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow is chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee. Senator Stabenow introduced a bill called the Justice for Black Farmers Act that attempts to step up to some of the historic inequities and discrimination, you know, trying to free up access to credit, trying to make land available. I'm wondering if there are things that you'd hope to see coming out of these efforts, and just what needs to fall into place to get some motion on this.
You know, I just hope it just doesn't fall on deaf ears. I just hope it's a genuine effort to really hit a home run with this thing. And, you know, there's a lot of things that have been instituted in other administrations, and they really never get off the ground. You know, we talk about the Pickford situation with the USDA back in 1999, and how Black farmers were disenfranchised as far as getting loans and financing for farms, and which caused them to go into foreclosure and lose their properties and things. But, you know, that still hasn't been resolved. I mean, that And look how many years that's been. And not to mention, there has to be some an equitable solution. I mean, $50,000 is, they might as well keep it. I mean, because you can't really do much with that going forward. I mean, they just have to continue to put an effort into this and give some attention to this, some serious attention to this, because it's much needed, you know, because we are at the precipice of extinction. Black farmers, they may never be anymore unless people like myself, who still have an interest in doing it, can actually raise up the next generation of these guys and show them that there is a way to make a living doing it.
When you think about Black families becoming more and more scarce, having to go out of business, having to sell their land, could you tell us a little bit about what you think is lost there, or what farming does offer Black families that really doesn't come from any other kind of work or wealth acquisition?
Well, you just hit it on the head. It's about wealth creation. I mean, probably the biggest wealth creation in history is the acquisition of land and property, because it's extremely valuable to have land. And I'm not just talking in a monetary sense. I'm talking in the sense that if you're rooted in a foundation, which is land, you can do so much with that land. There's so many multi-purpose things that can be done to basically care for your family. And one of the most important things is what I do right now is farming. Yeah, it's been tragic. I mean, you know, having property is a legacy. Having your own land can create a legacy. And that legacy is being lost by all these Black farmers that have lost all their land and property. That legacy is lost now. So that's why I encourage my family, my brothers and sisters, and my parents, if you want to hold on to a legacy, if you want to, you know, pass on a wealth or wealth creation, you know, make sure you do everything you can to hold on to the land that you have.
Bruce Michael Wilson is the owner of Groundswell Farms. Bruce Michael, thank you so much for talking to us, and thanks for the work you're doing too.
No, yeah, I appreciate it. Anytime. Thanks for, again, shining a light on this subject, and thank you for the good work.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. Be sure to check out our next episode when it publishes. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you like to listen, and you won't miss anything. You can follow us on Twitter at Stateside Radio. Remember, you can also stream the full Stateside program every day at michiganradio.org. Our episode of the podcast today was produced by Mercedes Mejia. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.